The Blueprint with Chris Phillips on Jazz FM.
Listening Colour.
New music from Tim Armacost on tenor saxophone with a fantastic trio we'll talk more about. In fact, quartet in places as well. The album is Time Being. That's the first play here on The Blueprint on this album coming out next week. It's Sculpture number one, Phase Shift. We'll play some more from the album, but I'm very lucky to have Tim Armacost join me on this week's Blueprint on a bit of a whirlwind UK tour. Whirlwind in two respects, because it is, and also that's the name of the label the album is coming out on. Tim, this is another fantastic album for you, and it sounds to me like you had an awful lot of fun doing it.
This was something of a risk, because I had some ideas that I had certainly never tried to play before, which is asking people to play in two different tempos and kind of taking a trio and pulling the pieces away from each other and letting them snap back. And before we went to the studio, I had tried it a couple of times with some musician friends, you know, hey, can we see if this works? And everybody was pretty enthusiastic. But, you know, before Tane and Jeff Tane Watts and Bob Hurst and I met in the studio, we hadn't never tried it before. So it was definitely something of a risk. And I have to say, I'm absolutely delighted with how it came out.
And it's a project that you kind of thought into existence musician-wise. A bit of an epiphany, really, with especially with regards to Tane, who's he's a special kind of drummer, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, I've seen myself trying to describe this moment of vision, and every time I say vision, or somebody says epiphany, or you know, it starts to get all kind of, you know, precious, you know. And it was, I don't want it to sound like I'm rocking the world or anything. It was just an idea, and it came in kind of the form of a scene in a movie. I was seeing myself in the studio playing with Tane, and he was swinging in a way kind of like he was practicing. And just, he found something. He was swinging in a way that felt so delicious. He just had to keep going. And I thought, that's an interesting thing, just to have a guy like that in the studio. Not that we count it off and start playing together, but just he's into something on his own. And then Bob and I are trading the melody of Ornette Coleman's Lonely Woman back and forth. And it just was a scene from a movie that I saw in my mind. And I thought, wow, that would be an interesting way to play. And it took about, so that particular idea became very interesting to mull, and over the course of a year and a half, I wrote six or seven compositions that all kind of explored different ways of attacking that problem.
So you and Bob were kind of together and exchanging views and ideas and stuff, but you, in your mind, you wanted Tane, and you went and got Tane for this project.
And Bob, yeah.
And Bob.
And what I mean to say is that in the vignette that I saw in my mind, it was me and Bob exchanging musical ideas.
Right.
Not that we actually spoke about it before the session. It was an idea to have those guys. The music. Composers talk about that a lot when they have an established band. You know, Duke Ellington is famous for saying, you know, I write for the guys in my band. And so this is an idea like that, where the musicians were a part of the original inspiration. There's the better word. It was an inspiration.
We use these highly emotive words, don't we,
yeah,
in jazz. You mentioned Ornette Coleman and sort of visualizing, just exchanging, you know, bits of Ornette Coleman to and fro. I mean, as a saxophonist in the lineage of things, how important is Ornette to this music genre, to music, to you?
So I described in one of the interviews I've done recently that I wasn't ready for Ornette's music until I was about 30. I was very much attracted to Sonny Rollins when I was in my 20s. That very articulate way of playing over the changes, navigating the harmony with melody, finding harmonic melodies and rhythmic melodies. I found him to be the pinnacle of what was being done with harmonic melodies, say. And then, of course, I found Coltrane and Hank Mobley and all the others. And while I was involved in that, so the project I was doing was learning how to master harmony, trying to figure out how to play melodies over harmony. So when I first encountered Ornette's music, it wasn't at all something I was interested in to break free of that. I was still trying to get in it. So his music just I didn't get it at all. And then around the time I was 30, my wife and I were living in India, in New Delhi for a year. And I'd been in New Delhi for about 3 months. And I put on this tune, in fact, Lonely Woman, And my wife came in from the other room and said, "What is that music? That's just incredible." And I said, "Yeah, this music is amazing." And it just, that was, the sky opened up. The clouds cleared, and I was ready for the idea that making up harmonic melodies that weren't confined to a structure would be something attractive. And so that's my process of arriving at an understanding of how that could happen. Of course, 30 years before then, he had completely opened up jazz in 1959, 60, 61, around in there, by proposing the idea of, I don't have to follow the structure. I can play it the way I hear it. So, you know, to be, and he took a lot of heat, took a lot of criticism when he proposed that way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And what I think is as important as anything else about him is that he just went, yeah, you can criticize me if you want, but this is how I'm doing it. Man, it takes a certain amount of nerve and courage and all that to stick to your guns in a situation like that. And boy, did he become an important artist.
Absolutely. You heard him in New Delhi there, and it opened up to you.
Yeah.
Would being in New Delhi and in amongst kind of a different culture have opened your senses more to it, do you think? What did being in New Delhi teach you about life and music?
Oh, that's a big question.
A lot of people go to India to find themselves, don't they?
Uh-huh, yeah. I think for me, more than finding myself, that was finding a bigger vision of what music can be. So I'd been in Delhi for maybe 2 months or so and hadn't heard a piano for 2 months. And as I said, you know, I'd been trying to figure out the piano and harmony for 10 years. And here I was freed from it, physically freed from it, interestingly enough. I wasn't like trying to get free from it at all, but here I was in an environment that was free of the piano. And I had some very interesting and fun experiences playing with Indian musicians at the outset. You know, right from the beginning, we had friends who introduced us to some musicians. So for me, that was an incredibly freeing experience to be in an environment where there was no harmony at all. There was just a rag, right? It's a melody, and it's got a scale, but you never leave the scale. You're staying inside one scale, and the challenge of the music is to find rhythmic melodies without moving the harmony. That's the challenge for us. They don't deal with harmony in the way we do, so they wouldn't see that as the same kind of challenge I see it. But addressing that challenge was, you know, it was a complete break from what I'd been trying to do for the last 10 years. And it was, you know, it was a hugely influential experience for me. We stayed there for almost a year.
Talking with Tim Armacost here on The Blueprint on Jazz FM. Music from the new album, Time Being. Let's play another. This is Tio. T.O., that's Tim Armacost there on the tenor saxophone from the new album called Time Being. You're listening to The Blueprint. We spoke about Ornette Coleman, but there with a Monk tune, T.O., this is the centenary year of Thelonious Monk. Are you sort of planning on doing a little bit more monkishness?
No, I'm not. In fact, if I'm honest, I didn't realize it was the centenary year of Thelonious Monk, so maybe I'll think about it a little bit more. I kind of went crazy for Monk's music when I saw the movie Straight No Chaser. That's interesting, this conversation. We're coming up against my limitations as a younger musician. I didn't get Monk either when I was younger. It was too angular for me.
Yeah.
And when I saw that movie, my brother and I went to Paris when I was just newly living in Amsterdam, about 1986. And we went to see that movie in the theaters when it came out. And seeing Monk's body, I never got to see him live, seeing him play and seeing his body, the way his body was hitting the music, and seeing his fingers and seeing how hard that music swung, the swing of it caught my attention more than the angularity of it. And I went on a tear. So since 86, I've been trying to, I learned about 50 of his tunes like right away that year. And now the project is more to try to keep playing them so I don't forget them.
Interestingly, this whole album, it's tenor saxophone, but you do play a range of saxophones, don't you?
I play tenor. That's my home. Tenor feels like home. Soprano, I absolutely love. And I've had some just great experiences on soprano. And soprano is an instrument you can't play like the tenor. You can't be a tenor player on soprano. You really have to try to approach the soprano as it is. So for me, it's not appropriate for every song. And I actually did bring the soprano to the recording session, and it was set up on the stage and ready, but I didn't hear it. So it wasn't a decision before making this record to do only tenor. But that's the way it happened.
We've had you on tour, Ronnie Scott's. You played there just tonight, the Archduke,
that's
in
right.
Southeast One. How's the tour been? And you know, the travel itinerary and stuff. Some crazy thing on the road.
I bought into this. I play with Valerie Ponomarev, the trumpet player, quite a bit. He played with Art Blakey, and one of the pearls of wisdom he got from Art Blakey and handed to me was, you wanted to be a jazz musician, right? Which is the answer to every time you want to open your mouth and complain.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. Then you just remember, this was my dream. So when we left Ronnie Scott's at 2:30, went straight to Gatwick, waited for an hour in the lounge, and then caught a flight to Valencia, and then didn't get into a bed until about 1 in the afternoon that night. It was just unbelievable.
But you're in Spain, so we're not really going to...
There we are in a beautiful place. There was a full house. The club was packed with people who loved the music, you know. So you just, I try to, when I'm in the moment of difficulty, like around noon that day when I couldn't get into my hotel room bed yet, I was starting to get a little angry. I just try to pull myself back and remember, this is all because we have a gig tonight, you know. Let's be grateful for that and proceed, you know.
Well, I mean, looking at your career, you're so well-traveled anyway. Beginnings in L.A., right?
That's where I was born.
Born in
stayed
L.A.?
Stayed there till I was five.
What's your bit of L.A.? Where were you?
Los Angeles, the eastern part of Los Angeles.
Okay, so you've lived in New York, as we mentioned before, New Delhi,
yeah.
Japan, I think Tokyo, right?
Tokyo for 4.5 years.
Yeah, some crazy cities there. I mean, there are lots of hustly, bustly stuff going on that lends itself to what you do. So traveling is a thing for you. But actually, interestingly, I know your tea over there that I made is probably getting slightly cooler by the minute. But your wife is English, so she probably hands you a boiling hot cup of tea, right?
Yes, she does.
You know all about
the water has to actually be boiling when you put it on the tea bag. That's how we do it at our house.
So she, let me guess, she's importing PG tips and other little bits of what other British things do you enjoy that?
In fact, I have an assignment, half of which I've fulfilled, which is to take home PG tips and Lapsang Souchong, which you can't get back in the States very easily. And I happen to like hobnobs quite a bit.
Marmite?
Marmite can't do, sorry. Can't do it. And I can't do the Australian version either.
Oh, yeah.
Vegemite?
Vegemite. Are you hip to Monster Munch?
No, don't know that one.
Oh, no, I have to get you a pack of Monster Munch then before you go.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming by, Tim, and chatting about your music. Excellent new album called Time Being for Whirlwind Recordings, and another one on the way in April with NYSQ, New York Standards Quartet.
Yep.
What have we got in store for that?
New York Standards Quartet's sixth recording in 12 years. We've been going every other year since the beginning, but we've ramped that up now. We've got two in a row now. Power of 10 came out this time last year. And Sleight of Hand is the name of the new record, coming out in April, I think the 28th is the release date, April 28th. And that's our sixth record, and the seventh is already in the can. So that's ready to come out at this time next year. So we're trying to kind of get ahead of things and make the production from that group very predictable and regular. So you
doing exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah, you get out to April and you think, huh, it ought to be time for an NYSQ release. That's what we're going for.
We'll look forward to that. And once again, thanks for coming by, Tim Armacost.
My pleasure to be with you. Thanks, Chris.
Tim Armacost, Alawain from Time Being, new on Whirlwind Recordings. Great to have him on the programme tonight.